and welcome to Friends in Your Ears, a podcast about podcasters talking about their favorite podcasts. I'm Kathy Campbell, and today I am joined by two fantastic guests, both of whom are across the pond. I have Anthony Johnson and James Thompson. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
So, Anthony, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Anthony Johnston. I am primarily a writer. I write mostly graphic novels and books and video games, but I'm also a podcaster. People will have heard me, hopefully, on the Incomparable Network elsewhere on a show called Unjustly Maligned, and occasionally on other shows around the network, such as this one. I like long walks on the beach and world peace.
Yes, world peace. Let's hear out for world peace. Man, it's so depressing to think about. So we'll move on to James Thompson, who will be slightly less depressing, I'm hoping.
Well, hopefully. I do not have any scripts currently optioned by major movie studios. I am merely a software developer, best known for pCalc on iOS and Mac. And I occasionally turn up slightly less so on the Incomparable Network and on Relay FM and places like that, usually talking about Doctor Who or video games or Doctor Who video games.
Do you know, that was probably the only instance I can think of where somebody would introduce somebody from Scotland and say they'll be less depressing than the person from England.
It helps that I know, well, James.
I also forgot to say I was in favor of world peace. So, you know, the moment has passed.
Oh, you monster.
Oh, all right. So now it's official. All of Scotland is not for world peace. You hear it here first. So I think we'll just move on to the very first question instead of talking about world peace, because that is not what this podcast is about. So, Anthony, how did you start listening to podcasts?
I don't fully remember, because it was a long time ago. I am sure that I listened to, you know, some early occasional intermittent podcasts in the very early 2000s. I know I did. I just can't tell you what they were or indeed how often I listened to them. The first one that I can remember that became a regular thing that I listened to was in 2005. Michael A. Stackpole, an American novelist, recorded a podcast called The Secrets, which was a spin-off from his newsletter, also called The Secrets. Kind of an ironic name because, you know, everybody wants to know the secret of how to be a successful author. But it's basically the newsletter and then the podcast were a show for writers full of, you know, just like tips and advice, because Stackpole is a very successful and prolific author. He's been a professional author for, you know, decades now. And it was a genuinely interesting show. It was just him talking into the mic, but it was well produced. He clearly had, you know, he was good at talking around his topic and sticking to it, full of genuinely useful advice that really did actually help me. I was a writer by that point, but I had only been a full-time writer for a few years, and the stuff in that show genuinely helped me, you know, be a better writer and attack some of my books more effectively. And I just devoured it. I listened to it. He released one a week for a while, and I listened to it every week without fail. And this was also, I think, just pre-iTunes podcasts. So, you know, back in the days when you had to copy and paste an XML URL into your podcast player of choice. I think The Secrets predated that. If not, then certainly some of the other ones that I listened to did, you know, predate that. But that was the first one that I listened to with any regularity. And then, you know, I moved on to what most people listening to this, I'm sure, will regard as The Usual Suspects, which is, in 2007, Merlin Mann launched The Merlin Show, and I listened to and watched that because he did a video one of that as well regularly. The original talk show with John Gruber and then with Dan Benjamin at the time. The next year, you'll remember this one, James. Adam and Joe did their Six Music podcast. That was 2008. And for a while, that was my absolute favorite show. Also that year, the team that developed the video game Burnout Paradise, Criterion, did a podcast to support the ongoing development and DLC for that game called Crash FM. And those were video casts, which I used to download and watch on my little video playing iPod avidly. I absolutely loved them. And then, you know, on to things like The Incomparable and The New Talk Show and Hypercritical. And, you know, so, and that was how I came to discover the world that we're kind of, the networks and the world that we're kind of inhabiting at the moment. But yeah, it's in terms of regularly listening to a show every week, it started with that show, The Secrets from Stackpole, which, you know, ironically I sought out because I thought, oh, this will be useful more than just entertaining. But it was also entertaining and led me on to, you know, lots of these other shows, which are nothing to do with my work, but I listen to, you know, purely for leisure.
Yeah, but it definitely, I mean, obviously it had an impact on you. You're now an extremely successful writer, and it's just amazing how much of an impact that podcast has had in your life and, you know, in your audience and your groups of people that you're talking with, because on The Incomparable, I mean, there are some writers, of course, but not everyone is a writer. And so you're being able to intermingle with non-writers, but still be inspired and have those motivations to be friends with other people is kind of cool.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, you know, becoming then a podcaster myself, which yeah. I know we're going to get to, you know, sort of later. But yeah, that was also, you know, even though it's kind of part of my career now, it really just started because I love listening to them.
Absolutely. All right, James, what about you? How did you start listening?
Well, I think for me, it was also sort of early 2000s, and the exact details are lost to history. but I think, you know, not that I'm saying I'm making up an example to have something to say, but I think it was also around 2005. And, you know, I was going to say that the kids today won't believe that you used to have to tune in and listen to shows live at a certain time on a particular day. But then they totally would, because there are people that do that all the time with the live podcast recordings. But, you know, back in 2005, we had this thing called radio. And I've always liked the BBC Radio 5 film review show on a Friday with Mark Kermode and Simon Mayo. The show, also known as Wittertainment, and why you always have to say hello to Jason Isaacs. The BBC started making it available as a podcast. I think it was pretty soon after Apple added podcast support to iTunes. And, you know, it was just far more convenient for car journeys and the like. So I just started listening that way. And I think, you know, it was initially, it was just really a copy of the radio show. And it's also, it's still going, and it's grown to have extra podcast-only bits at the beginning and end. And the main thing about the show seems to be the two main presenters bickering like an old married couple for most of the show, and some stuff about films. But it is highly entertaining and worth checking out. I believe it's available even to you in the former colonies. The first dedicated podcast that I actually listened to was the One Up Yours show from 2006 onwards, from the former video games website oneup.com. It kind of popularized the Four White Men Talk About Video Games podcast format, and I'll come back to that point later. But in this case, it was Garnet Lee, British guy John Davidson, Luke Smith, and Shane Bettenhausen, who have all gone on to do things elsewhere in the games industry. Luke Smith is the director of the Destiny 2 video game at Bungie, for example. And that show also taught me that shows change and shows end. In the case of 1UP, they had a ton of layoffs, people left, and, you know, half the cast gone, and then they renamed it and brought other people in that I didn't like, and, you know, eventually the whole site closed down and everybody scattered to the far winds. But coming out of that, there were also a bunch of other podcasts that were interesting. There was, I need to get this right, it's called Rebel FM, not Relay FM. Rebel FM.
Very different thing.
Yes.
Rebel FM was a podcast that was started by all the people who got laid off at 1UP. and then went on. Yeah, and the first episode was like recorded, I think, a day after they all got their notice.
Oh, wow.
So that was an interesting podcast to listen to. And they sort of also settled down on a small group of people, and they're still going too. And there was lots of podcasts around the sort of video game world, particularly around the 1UP people. There was Retronauts, which was another podcast talking about retro video games, which is still going today. Even though they now have to talk about games that were released when I consider it not to be retro. You know, like, the PlayStation is not retro. Even if it's 23 years old or something. Anyway,
PS2 is retro now. That'll make you feel old.
Yeah, well, I remember I got one of those little, you know, the Atari 2600 type things in a joystick that you plug into your TV. And it said on the side something like, play games like your dad did.
Oh,
it's just
now that is just depressing.
Get lost. yeah, so that's really where I started in all this.
So can I, before Kathy asks us another question, isn't this interesting that you and I both basically sort of developed a love of podcasts, listening to things that aren't our jobs?
Yeah.
Like, yes, the first one was a writing show, but, you know, most of the podcasts that I listened to, certainly in the early days and through the late 2000s, were tech. Because I'm a bit of a nerd. But, you know, that's nothing to do with my work. You know, me listening to something like Hypercritical has no bearing or relevance on my work. I just enjoy it because I like John and I like the subjects they were talking about. And, you know, same with things like ATP now. And you're listening to games shows, but you don't make games.
Well,
I do now. Kind
now
of,
you do.
Sort of.
You do sort of now, but
no,
you know what I mean. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's a fair point. And I'm going to, this is something I'll mention later on, but I don't listen to a lot of tech podcasts right now because, you know, it's my job.
Because it's your job, yeah.
And I want to not be, you know, on 24 hours a day, you know, in the world of everything Apple and whatever. And so, yeah, being able to, I mean, I think it's fair to say that cinema and video games are two of my biggest sort of relax passion type things, and yeah, so that's my podcast.
Hence why the first thing you listened to was a movie podcast. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
yeah,
and I think, yeah, I don't. I while it's sometimes in, I mean, I love, of course, all our tech podcast people that we know very well, and I will list them off later, but I don't necessarily want to listen to that in my downtime.
Right, yeah. No, I totally understand. It's like, I don't want to listen to, I don't listen to writing shows anymore because it's like, you know, I did just, it's not that I don't need to, because that sounds terribly egotistical, but yeah, it just reminds me of work. I, you know, I want to relax when I'm listening to a show. I think, isn't it also, and Kathy, you're probably going to get this a lot throughout this show, I'm sure. This is not, I'm not the only person who's going to notice this, but it really shows how important iTunes taking on podcasts was, you know, developing the podcast directory in iTunes was, that both of us really started listening in earnest around that time. And I wonder just how many people that's true for. It's got to be
absolutely
a lot, I would think.
Well, especially because it takes away the technical part of it, because people having to copy and paste anything into anything, if they're not technical, is really difficult. In addition, I mean, there's people now that have issues like finding a podcast in the podcast app and subscribing. And I've walked many family members through how to do it and what it is and all of that. And so by making it even as easy as it is now, it's allowed it to be opened up to this whole new world of people that weren't technical enough to do it before. And so definitely, yeah, Apple, you know, embracing that and making it as easy as it is has made a huge impact on podcasts as a whole.
Yeah, and I think just spreading awareness of the fact that podcasts exist. And, you know, back in 2005, you could have, it was a bit like Yahoo in the early days, wasn't it? You know, you could have a directory of every podcast that was made because there just weren't that many.
Right.
It was also around about that time. I was looking back on some Wikipedia pages to get some dates, and I had forgotten the whole Apple suing anybody that had the word pod in the name of their product.
Right.
Because that's one other way to ensure the supremacy of your iTunes podcast library is to sue everybody else.
Oh, man.
Not their best idea.
No.
But I think they dropped that idea pretty soon as podcast became a generic term.
Just like Kleenex.
Uberized, yeah.
Yeah, and Dyson vacuum cleaners. No, wait, Dyson Hoovers, yes.
Okay, so next question, Anthony. What made you want to actually start making a podcast?
So I have, being a writer, sort of to an extent, means that you're a bit of a public figure. And so I have spent my career being interviewed, appearing on panels at comic conventions. I also give lectures and speak at conferences and stuff like that. So I am very used to doing this sort of thing, you know, to talking to people, to chatting about me, about my career, or about a subject, you know, that we might have decided on beforehand, which you often get at Comic-Con panels. Mm. And yeah, I'm very comfortable doing this sort of thing. I am also a bit of an audio geek. This is something that doesn't come out a lot in the podcast, unless you listen to like some of the very specialist music episodes that I've done. But I am an amateur musician, and when I was younger, I was in and out of rock and roll and heavy metal bands. And part of what I love about that is just the audio process. I'm a bit of an audio geek. You know, I love messing around with sequencers and filters and effects pedals and all that sort of stuff. So those combined, I don't know, I just kind of, I figured, and this is terribly egotistical of me, but I always figured that I would be fairly good at it if I, you know, gave it a proper go and got some practice in. But, and this is the writer part of me now stepping in, but I didn't do it. I mean, I was, as I say, I appeared on other people's shows as an interview guest, of course, but I was reluctant to start my own show until I had a concept, until I had something to announce to people other than just, hey, it's me, because I felt that there's a certain part of my audience, my existing audience, that would tune in just to hear me, sure, of course, just the same as I would, you know, with some of my favorite people.
Right.
But I knew that if I wanted to reach beyond my existing audience and do something that sort of, you know, would break out a little, I needed that killer concept. And then, as I've spoken about this in the past, so I won't go into too much detail, but the idea for Unjustly Maligned came to me, what would it be, about 3 years ago now. Just over 3 years ago, I think. And I thought, this could work. This is a workable idea. And so I began. I did that by getting in touch with a few people who I had already spoken to, been interviewed by, or that I knew were sort of good podcasters that I'd been in touch with already, and asked them to be my trial guests while I recorded some pilot episodes of Unjustly Maligned to make sure to see, does this thing have legs? Am I any good at this? And it took a while. I did need that practice, but, you know, eventually I figure I got there. But really, it was just the desire to make something. And this is, you know, part of my whole career as a creator of various things. I love making things. I love creating stuff. And as I say, this is one of the things that I thought, I enjoy listening to these, and I figure I could be okay at hosting them as well if I had that killer idea. And so I just, you know, waited for something to come along, and there it was.
That's fantastic. And I love Unjustly Maligned. And as sad as your audience is that it is on hiatus, it's for very good reasons. I mean, you are off doing amazing things right now. So it's okay that it takes a breather and gets on the back burner.
Yeah, it is a shame. Honestly, nobody is sadder about the show having to go on hiatus than me. But yeah, unfortunately, because I am still, you know, being a writer is still what I am. And much as I love podcasting, I can't let it get in the way of my career
Yes.
Of being a writer. So, yeah, unfortunately, it's had to take a back seat for the moment.
Absolutely. All right, James, what about you? What means you want to start recording podcasts?
Well, I'm also sad that Unjustly Maligned is on hiatus because we never got around to doing my episode.
I know. But... I'm so sorry.
But, you know, I'm not taking that personally. He didn't shut down the whole show just because of me.
Just so I didn't have to talk to you.
About Bollywood, yeah. So, interestingly, I was also a bit of an audio geek. And as I sit here recording this, there's a MIDI keyboard taking up a good chunk of my desk space. Not that I'm any good at it, but I was, I had the traditional zebra-striped, thunderbolt-shaped guitar in my teenage years. And I always love, I still do love messing around with synthesizers and audio production and stuff. And I don't know if that's why that's one of the things that led me into podcasting, but it's just interesting to hear you say that as well. So I had remembered an amusing anecdote about where my podcast career started in a way, but I'll get to that in a minute. It occurred to me that that's not actually the reason why I wanted to make them in the first place. So I have like huge social phobias about public speaking, or had possibly. I'm a software developer. I'm not a writer. I don't get interviewed. I don't stand up in front of Comic Cons. I'm in a profession that's stereotypically not particularly good at talking to people. The thought of going up in front of an audience literally terrified me. Since I had recently turned 40, I think, at the time, I decided I would try and fix some of these bugs in my own code and do something about it. So I decided to face head on two things that I had been distinctly avoiding, which was giving talks at conferences and talking on podcasts. And I've gradually gone from being sort of terrified of them both to actively enjoying them while still being slightly terrified of them. You know, I'm still working on actually being good at them, but, you know, good first step. And, you know, as you know, I still get freaked out and I write lots of notes, which in turn sometimes freaks other people out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm reading this from a note right now. But the anecdote is that at the end of the UL conference in Ireland in 2014, I was sitting having lunch with one Jason Snell, who I've known for longer than either of us would care to remember. I think it's got to be about 23 years or something, but no.
Well, when did you put out the first version of Drag Thing? I think that's probably...
That was 94, and he was a beta tester before it released, so yeah.
So even before that was released, you knew him? Wow.
Yeah. I don't know how, but I found the emails, so, you know. I don't know where this came from, and he was the first person to review my software, really. But yeah, so we were sitting having lunch, and we'd been talking for a good solid hour about Doctor Who and Star Wars and all these things, as you do. And he said at the end, oh, we should have made this a podcast. And I kind of thought about it and thought, yeah, that's, you know, it's pretty easy to sort of sit and talk to you about Doctor Who. So that would be a good sort of first step into this world. And that's pretty much where it started, because I did a Doctor Who flashcast with him about 4 months later from that, when the new series started up. And that was my first ever podcast I recorded back in August 2014. That's not the good part of the anecdote, though. So at some point during our conversation, one young, fresh-faced pre-Relay FM, Mike Hurley, came up and introduced himself to us. I think he must have known Jason at that point. But I have no memory of this whatsoever. So when I officially became firm friends with Mike the following year at UL in 2015, and I said something like, oh, it's been great to finally meet you in person, he said something along the lines of,
oh, no.
Yes, it has, but we've already met. I had clearly completely blanked him in a go away, kid, can't you see I'm talking to my friend here kind of a way. Something that brings me great shame to this day. Mike, in fact, sent me a photo earlier today entitled, "Here I am at the exact point that you didn't notice me."
Oh, sad.
So, you know, I hope by admitting this on this public forum, I can start to properly make amends.
Oh, wow. I just want to circle back to what you said about us both being audio geeks. And I wouldn't, maybe I wasn't clear enough in this. I don't think being an audio geek is necessarily something that made me think I want to make a podcast. It was more that it gave me a certain amount of confidence that I can put this together. You know, at the very least, I know GarageBand and I understand how microphones work. And, you know, it's more that kind of, I'm not scared by the prospect of buying a microphone and, you know, fiddling with audio equipment, rather than thinking, oh, I'm an audio genius, so I can make a podcast. You know.
Which is good, because I'm not an audio genius and I'm making a podcast. So, you know, it's, I'm glad that that's
I never considered myself a genius. I sold all my original synthesizers back in 1992 and my old Atari ST. And I took all the money for that and I bought my first Mac Classic. And that was pretty much the end of my music career. And, you know, it's a great
although
loss
considering... Considering what came afterwards, that is kind of a genius move.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, I think financially it was the right decision, because I don't think I would have become the next, you know, Jean-Michel Jarre or whatever I was thinking at that precise moment.
Although, think how much Vince Clarke could give you for those old synths now if you still.
Oh, don't talk about that.
You're gonna like, make him cry.
I keep looking on eBay at them. You know, it's
oh,
like
no, don't do that to yourself. No, what are you doing?
My beautiful Roland Juno 106 synthesizer, analog, beautiful sound. Oh, and now that they're worth an absolute fortune. yes.
Never so, look up things you've already sold on eBay to see how much you could have got for them. Good Lord.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's more I would like to repurchase my childhood. You know,
I did that a few years ago, actually. I have the model of typewriter, manual mechanical typewriter that my mother bought me when I was 10 years old.
Oh, wow.
I went and found it on eBay as a 40th birthday present to myself a while back. It's sitting on a desk in my study now. So actually, surprisingly, I thought it was going to cost like hundreds of pounds, but it didn't. It was surprisingly affordable. But yeah, I thought that was my sort of 40th gift to myself. Was, I mean, obviously it's not exactly the same typewriter, but it is exactly the same model, even in the same color. So yeah, that's a nice piece of nostalgia for me.
Oh,
yeah,
brilliant.
Well, let's not get onto my space Lego collection and trying to bring back one's childhood that way.
Oh, I love it. All right. So we don't, to separate ourselves from the nostalgia train, let's go to the main question that this podcast exists for. Anthony, what is your favorite podcast and why?
In the grand tradition of all podcast questions about favorite things, I have a large list of the things that are all runners up. Old shows, if anybody who loves sort of English comedy, or British comedy, I should say, really, but although it is a kind of a particularly English style, I think, should go and look for the old Adam and Joe Six Music podcasts, because they were hilarious, absolutely hilarious, just ridiculous, childish, but very, very funny. Currently, I listen to a lot of comedy stuff because I just love comedy. Rahulastapa.
That was going to be one of mine.
Yeah, Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast is very much a show that you either love or hate, but I love it. And it's a comedian, Richard Herring, who basically interviews mostly other comedians on stage for an hour and just records the show. And there's no editing, unless something libelous gets said. But it's just them, you know, talking on stage for an hour and basically batting jokes off one another. And, you know, it's up and down according to his guest and what have you in quality. But I would, you know, it certainly hits way, way more often than not. As I said, I am a bit of a tech nerd. I listen to ATP, Gruber's talk show, occasional episodes of things like Upgrade and Clockwise. You know, that's what happens. I love Alec Baldwin's show on WMIC, Here's the Thing. Again, kind of, I only listen to selected episodes according to who his guest is. But who knew that Alec Baldwin would be a really good interviewer? And yet he's been doing it for years now, and he is. He gets, you know, stuff out of some of these people that I think regular, you know, a sort of proper journalist interviewer maybe wouldn't get. So some of them are really right. fascinating. His interview with Billy Joel, which is one of the early episodes, is fantastic. Even if you don't like Billy Joel, it's just a great interview because they're clearly two Long Island boys, probably old friends, and yeah, just kind of really chilled and quite an intimate conversation. That's fantastic. I do listen to the one writing podcast I do listen to is Script Notes, which is John August's show. John August is a screenwriter out in Hollywood. He does it with a guy called Craig Mazin, another screenwriter. And that's mostly advice for screenwriters, but it's also discussing issues of the day around, you know, the sort of movie industry as they pertain to screenwriters and stuff. So that's quite interesting. But I am completely and utterly biased, and I am going to say that my favorite show, which is to say the one where I literally never miss an episode and never skip an episode, is Game Show here on the Incomparable Network. I absolutely love Game Show. I've been on it several times, sure, but like, I, you know, there's many, many more episodes that I'm only on it occasionally. I absolutely love Game Show. There is, it's a very strange thing to try and quantify why it's so enjoyable. I mean, the game night ones, I often say that's enjoyable because it feels like you're round your friend's house
yeah.
playing a game with your friends, you know, that's fun. But the other ones, things like Inconceivable or Low Definition, you know, those aren't really, that's not like sitting around playing a board game, but there is something about those shows that I love. They are always entertaining. They have a great dynamic. There's something about those shows that is endlessly listenable. And so that is my pick for favorite podcast right now.
That's fantastic.
So you see, you're going to make me sound bad because I'm not going to pick a show by
an incomparable show.
An incomparable show. So I'm never going to get on again. So
that's a lie because most everyone has not picked incomparable shows. In fact, Anthony, I believe, is the first time that we have a legit incomparable show. Oh, no, that's a lie. Nope. Okay. So there's been a couple. There's been a couple, but there is no requirement for an incomparable show.
James.
Yeah. No pressure. So, James.
Well, I was also going to mention Richard Herring just briefly because I think you either get him or you don't get him. And him and Stuart Lee were sort of key comedy influences in the sort of 90s. I love his stuff. I go and see him live anytime he comes anywhere near here. And I was amazed to discover that he's actually shorter than me, which I took some solace in. So the majority of podcasts I listen to regularly these days are still not tech podcasts, as I say. You know, I have very limited time to actually listen to podcasts, which is, you know, one of my excuses for not picking something like Clockwise, Upgrade, Connected, ATP, Talk Show, you know, all the great shows, and I do dip in and out of them, but I can't listen to every episode. And my commute to the office is about 30 seconds long, and I can't listen to any kind of speaking when I'm writing code. The language centers of my brain can only handle one language at a time.
Right.
So typically, the two times I listen to podcasts are standing in the shower, standing in the shower, in the car, which I don't do a lot of either, and every night when I'm trying to fall asleep. I talked about One Up Yours earlier, and I've generally continued to listen to podcasts about the video games industry, which I find fascinating because it's basically this parallel universe to the Apple developer industry, because a lot of the press is similarly located around San Francisco area. The big developer conference is in Moscone West, which in San Francisco, which is where Apple's developer conference used to be held.
Yep.
So, you know, when you listen on the podcast and they're talking about the Bay Area and they're talking about all this sort of Silicon Valley stuff, it's kind of like this looking through, you know, a portal into this other universe that, you know, I'm not part of in any way, but it's still fascinating to hear this outside perspective of. My favorite gaming podcast for many, many years has been the Giant Bombcast. And this was a podcast that started when one of the journalists who was working for GameSpot, Jeff Gerstmann, he wrote a very critical review of a game. And I think it was something like a Kane and Lynch or something like that. And they were running a big advertising campaign for Kane and Lynch, you know, all around the sides of the website and stuff. And he basically gave the game a bad review. And I can't remember the exact details, but basically he ended up resigning and he created his own website. And a lot of people flocked to it because, you know, this was the sort of journalistic integrity taking a stand. You know, it doesn't matter if the advertisers are paying big money. You know, the game's terrible. So yeah. We should actually tell our readers that. So he started this website, Giant Bomb. And they had a podcast which started, I think, I wrote down when it was, but I can't remember exactly when it started, but it's been going for a long time. And the lineup has changed a bit over the years, but it's pretty much been four or sometimes more guys talking about video games. And one of the hosts and co-founder of the website, Ryan Davis, died in 2013 at the age of 34. I think it was just after he got married. And I'd been listening to this show for years, and it hit me in a way way more than I'd expected it to. And, you know, I realized I was sort of emotionally invested with this group of people, you know, and they don't know who I am at all. But because
you
I've been
met them in real life, presumably.
No, I've never met them in real life. But because I've been listening to them week in, week out for, you know, like 5 years or something, you realize you've got this connection.
Yep. And, yeah, and there's something quite intimate about podcasts, isn't there?
Yeah. Yes. And it was also particularly, you know, they kept going with a podcast like the next week or a couple of weeks after. And you basically heard them dealing, you know, with this loss.
Wow.
And
that grief. Yeah.
It's strange, you know, that you realize that for a lot of these podcasts, they could be talking about anything. And for this, they normally do. They'll spend the first half hour talking about, you know, the state of pizza in the Bay Area or something completely random that's nothing to do with games. And they could talk about anything. And it's the chemistry of the people and the interplay between them is what I really like. And I still listen to it faithfully, but that's not going to be my choice today.
That's not your number one.
No. So that podcast has had at least two children. So some of the hosts moved over to the East Coast and they created a separate podcast called the Giant Beastcast. And two of my favorite Beastcast hosts, Austin Walker and Patrick Klepek, they eventually left Giant Bomb at different times. And they're now back together working for Vice website, who have a gaming portal called Waypoint. So they have their own podcast, Waypoint Radio, along with Rob Zachney. However, both the Beastcast and Waypoint Radio have now both radically changed the four men formula by each introducing an actual woman. And
shocking.
In the case of the Beastcast, there's Abby Russell. And on Waypoint Radio, there's Danielle Riendu. And Austin is also a person of color. So it's highly refreshing, like after over a decade or so of listening to these things, to get a bit more diversity and different viewpoints into these podcasts. And, you know, they just recently did the Giant Bomb. They have this Game of the Year thing where they lock everybody in a room and they come up with the top 10 games in a variety of categories and then top 10 of the whole year. This year they actually put out 24 hours literally of podcasts of them debating things.
Oh wow.
Because you know, there's, if you've got like a half dozen or a dozen people and they all have very strong views, there's a lot of trading back and forward. But it was interesting, like with Abby in the mix, she would say, they would, everybody would say, oh, this was a really great game. This was a great game. And she would say, yeah, but it completely objectifies women, this, 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 and this. And you go, huh, I hadn't actually thought about that. You're absolutely right. And it's, yeah, it's having that sort of extra voice in there that's just saying something that's maybe not the same as the four white guys that you've been listening to for the last decade. So if I have to pick one, I'm going to go with Waypoint Radio. If you're looking for a more intellectual approach to video games, the Austin's got a PhD in video games. They're kind of, they're very much discussing the sort of wider artistic context of things. I would give that one a listen. But I would also try the Bombcast and the Beastcast because they are the originals.
You mentioned your lack of commute. My commute is like 10 feet as well.
Yeah.
Which is actually not so, I don't miss that so much for podcasts, but for reading. When I used to have a commute, I read so much more than I do now because there was time to do, you know, nothing else. One thing I will say, however, what you should do is get a dog and join the gym. And then you will have lots of time to listen to podcasts because that's where I do a lot of my podcast listening.
Yeah, I would say that the joining a gym aspect, yes, this should be done.
And then get yourself some decent Bluetooth headphones and off you go.
Oh, I've got the Bluetooth headphones. All I'm lacking is the willpower.
Yeah, that's the hard part, actually getting there, for sure.
I have the exercise machine in the front room. So, you know, I can't even justify the, oh, well, I'd have to join a gym or walk to it.
Oh, so you could just listen to podcasts while working out in your own home.
Yes, I could literally do that right now.
Well, maybe not right now, because there's still one question left. And I know that this has been stressing you out, James, because you've been prepped
my for notes, it. My notes say, final bonus question, and then in 128-point font, three question marks.
All right. So, you're going to think about your closet and the clothing that's in your closet slash dresser slash whatever the British call it.
Wardrobe.
Wardrobe. There we go. Thank you. Oh, of course. Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Of course it's wardrobe.
I was going to say, think of C.S. Lewis.
Yes. Okay. What is one piece of clothing that if it was completely ruined by moths or rats or laundry, something, you would be absolutely depressed and wish that you could replace?
Ah, well, okay. So, again, top four style, I have two answers for this. because one of them is like kind of like a silly but obvious. One of the, my sort of Hollywood extravagance, as it were, after Atomic Blonde was a film, was I went to Savile Row and got myself a suit handmade. And so naturally, if any harm were to come to that, I would be rather gutted, mainly just because it costs so much money,
right?
but also because obviously, you know, I got it made to celebrate, and I wore it to the premieres of Atomic Blonde, you know, in like Austin and Berlin and Los Angeles and stuff. So it has sentimental attachment, right, as well. So there's that. But actually, this already happened to me a few years ago. I had a long sleeve T-shirt from my very first Paradise Lost gig back in 1993, I think it was, which was just one of the best gigs I've ever been to. Nothing but good memories. They are still my favorite band because they're still going now. And this was a fantastic shirt. And unfortunately, because it was so old and because I used to wear it to gigs, and these are heavy metal gigs, it's just absolutely full of holes, you know, like rips and tears and holes. And eventually it just got to the point where I couldn't wear it. It was ridiculous. You know, it was unwearable because it was so worn and ruined. I don't regret that, because I have nothing, again, but great memories of wearing that to various gigs and the gig where I bought it. And it lasted me almost 20 years, so I really can't complain. But it was an authentic, original 1993 from, you know, basically the point you could argue that sort of launched that band onto success in their careers. A fantastic gig. a great shirt as well, a great design, and unfortunately I just had to let it go. But what really kills me is literally 6 months after I finally threw it out, I saw somebody online doing a thing where when their t-shirts get worn, they cut out the front of the t-shirt mm-hmm. and frame it. Yes. And I was like, why didn't I think of that?
Oh no!
Why? No!
All right, James, have you had enough time to...
Yes, I have. I actually have two answers to this as well.
Oh, yay.
I think... Oh, what order to do these? So, yeah, I think the first one is I have a T-shirt from the original iMac introduction that Steve Jobs did at the Flint Center in 1998. And this is important to me because I... discovered pretty much that day that I was working on the iMac project when I was at Apple. We had all been working on this little bit of software and didn't really know much about what it was. And we were told to go along to this thing where they were doing, Steve was going to introduce some new product. And it's like, oh yeah, some new product. I'm sure that will be exciting. And, it turned out to be the iMac, the original Bondi blue iMac. And Steve stood up and he said, and he was talking about it. And we kind of were looking at each other and we were saying, this can't be our project, can it? And it was quite clear eventually that it was. And then he said, and it's going to ship in 90 days. And we all were like, no, it's
what?
Not. so yeah, that I have that t-shirt from that I was handed when I left the auditorium, and yes, I guess that has great sentimental value, and it was 20 years ago now I think about it.
It was 1998, wasn't it?
Yep.
Wow.
And from the same, I think pretty much the same year, when I was over in California, there was a friend of mine who was working at LucasArts in the sound department. And he said, would you like to come out to Skywalker Ranch to have some lunch? And
yes.
I said, yes, please. And he took us out. First of all, took us around LucasArts and Industrial Light and Magic. And then took us to out to the ranch. And this was like a week or so before, a week or two before Phantom Menace came out. So, you know, we were all excited and not terribly, terribly disappointed. and yeah, one of the things that I got at the time, I bought two t-shirts, both of which are a bit wrecked. And a LucasArts blanket, which is still sitting in the living room. It's doing great duty 20 years on. And yeah, it's sadly, this story has a tragic part to it as well, because I kept up with this guy for many years. And I emailed him like last year or something, and the email bounced. And I thought, that's a bit odd. And I Googled for him, and it said something like, you know, there was a memorial fund being set up in his name. And I thought, that's an odd thing to set up a memorial fund for somebody that's still alive.
Oh,
and
no.
And yeah, he had moved somewhere in Scandinavia and had been killed in a motorbike accident like a year before. And I'd never known. And I found out just completely at random. So I've got this weird two-way connection with this thing, because it's like this cool Skywalker Ranch tour and everything, you know, positive about that. And then also feeling sad about Jory.
And also reminds you of this friend that's gone. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So I think those definitely win on that, even if it's a bit of a downer.
Yeah.
Well, although, you know, on the other hand, isn't it also something I would hope, at any rate, that, you know, reminds you to kind of, you know, live and enjoy life.
Oh, yeah.
While you can. And, you know, it's sort of, as tragic as those things are, I always try to sort of look on them as, like, as we're recording, what is it, like a day after the death of the lead singer of the Cranberries was announced.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, and she's literally the same age as me. And so, yeah, that's the sort of thing that I look at and go, well, you know, all the more reason not to delay gratification, as it were, all the more reason to just live and, you know, enjoy what you've got, because you just never know, dear.
Indeed. Follow that, Kathy.
No pressure.
Now that we've talked about world peace and death of friends and living for the moment, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Friends in Your Ears. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. You can find us online. We are at friendsinyourears.com or on Twitter at friendsinears. You can find Anthony on Twitter at Anthony Johnston. And James is at James Thompson. And I am at Mrs. Soup. I hope you all have an absolutely fantastic day and this did not depress you. Bye.
What else did you expect when you got two British people on?